You're listening to the Embrace Running Podcast. I'm Mark.
And I'm Elena, and this is episode number 8 for February 26, 2012.
Welcome to the show. This is the podcast where we talk about everything running, from
5Ks to marathons, anything in between.
Any random things that we come across. It's been a pretty quiet week, I guess, because we didn't race this week. I think I'm in race withdrawal because I really want to do another race.
After doing 3 this year.
Three in 2 months, I guess. Yeah. Something like that. So let's jump right in and let's see how your week went.
I had a pretty good week. I logged 35 miles in 4 days. I ended up taking a couple of days off after Rock and Roll Pasadena, which we did last weekend. For no particular reason, just kind of felt a little lazy and didn't get back into running. So I did one incline workout at the gym for 4.5 miles, which I know I said I've been trying to do a little bit more incline and hill workout because I have my first trail half marathon coming up next month. So I'm trying to get those miles in. So I did that. And then I did one hill workout, or I guess really just a trail run yesterday for just over 8 miles. So that was pretty good, I think, preparation, or at least start for the half marathon. Although I realize I only have like 20 days left and maybe I waited a little bit too late.
Yeah, you only have, I mean, after
waited
this
a little
weekend,
too long.
Yeah, there's only to, like to start 2 weekends
preparing.
In between.
I know, but so yeah, I did a trail run yesterday, ended up doing, I think I looked online and I ended up doing only about 500 feet elevation change, which is not much, I don't think.
Now, do you
wait, I did it twice, so then that would be
1,000 total.
Okay, so that makes me feel a little bit better because I was worried this morning when I was kind of thinking about it because the half marathon I think has about 2,000, and I was thinking, oh my gosh, I did 500 feet yesterday, so I did a quarter of what I'm going to be doing, and my legs were pretty tired at the end. But now I feel better because I forgot I had done it twice yesterday. Yeah, so 1,000. Okay, so I only have 1,000 more feet.
So you said the race is 2,000 feet?
Yeah, 2,000 feet elevation change. I did do a 10K at the end of December, the New Year's Eve, the Brazen one that we talked about before. And I think that was about 600 feet elevation change. So I was tired after that, though.
So 3 times. But a lot of that elevation actually came in one long...
True.
One long climb.
Yes, steep.
And then, you know, yeah, and then one... went up the climb and then just came back down.
Right.
Versus this other race that you have next month, I'm assuming it's a little more rolling.
I think so.
I have no idea because I haven't looked at the paperwork.
I did look at the elevation chart and it is a little bit more rolling, but I think it's more towards the end that there's kind of a big climb and descent, which I think I'm glad that it's more towards the end. I think it's like mile 9 or 8, 9 or 10, something like that. I think that it's more towards the end versus doing it right at the beginning and then just feeling like my legs are just jello for the rest of the...
Now, that's not an out and back, right?
No. I think it's like 2 loops.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the race we're talking about is here in the Bay Area, Badger Cove. From Brazen Racing. So if you go to brazenracing.com, that's the race we're talking about.
Yeah, and it's an inaugural race for them.
First time at it's at this lake called Lake Del Valle.
Yeah,
which we've been to several times before.
Right,
pretty popular place for camping and hiking.
Yeah,
and, fishing.
Although I never ran there.
Never ran there. You've hiked there before.
No, I wish I had. So I'm trying. I'm trying to get some kind of some trail and also kind of some hill runs in before then. So I think I've done a lot of or several half marathons, so I'm not too worried about the distance overall, but I'm kind of worried about the hills and then the downhills, actually, because those kind of seem to be tough. Well, not, I don't want to say tougher, but I mean tougher than expected, I guess. Like I expect uphills to be tough and, you know, for me to be out of breath and, you know, that sort of thing. But the downhills are, I guess, more technically difficult, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm a little worried about that. But so did that just a little over 8 miles yesterday. And actually did that at Coyote Hills, which is in East Bay Regional Park in East Bay. So that was kind of nice. It was kind of windy to start, but...
I did the same run as you did. We went together yesterday to run at Coyote Hills. And yeah, it was really windy at the car when we got there.
Yeah.
And then after that, wasn't too bad.
Right. Yeah.
Although we should expect that because Coyote Hills is like right on the edge of San Francisco Bay.
Mm-hmm.
So the wind is always blowing through there.
Right. And I guess looking back, I don't really remember ever being in Coyote Hills and not having any windy. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just a lot windier than I had expected. So did that. And then I actually did pretty well with cross training this week. So I did 3 days on the spinner and even started doing some push-ups again, which I haven't done in a long time. So I think I've mentioned before kind of my short-term goals right now are doing a little bit more cross training, be more consistent with that. So I had a good week with that and then just do kind of some more hill and trail running. Mm-hmm. So I had a pretty good week, even though I kind of really didn't do much at the beginning.
But you picked it up towards the
end. I picked it up towards the end, I wouldn't recommend, I would recommend kind of spacing it out and spreading it out over the 7 days versus doing it all at the end. But it worked out, although I'm kind of tired now. Did a long run today at the gym on the treadmill, which I hadn't done in a couple of weeks.
And how many miles did you do today?
I did 15.
Hey.
15. So, yeah, feeling it a little bit now. But
can't relate. Never run that far.
So how was your week?
It was a really easy week, actually, because we did the half last weekend. I took the beginning part of the week off and didn't run, so I skipped my Tuesday run on purpose, mm-hmm. Just to have a couple days of rest.
Not because you're being lazy like me,
not because I was being lazy. That was kind of the plan. So ran Thursday. I don't know if I did 3, 4, something like that. Felt fine. A little tired, I guess, after the half and the couple days off, a little stiff. And then, of course, that run we did at Coyote Hills yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
So I did 8 miles. My original plan was just kind of not really tackle any serious hills there and just kind of, you can go around the area there. It's like a little loop that's kind of paved most of the way. And my plan was to do that, but kind of like the second trail that I saw heading up the hill, I just kind of took off and said, hey, I'm going to do some hill work today too. And it was actually a lot of fun. It was really hard. The first couple of hills were fun and not too bad. When I got to like 6 miles in and did a hill there, I definitely had to take a break going up the hill because it was pretty steep. Because I always say I never run on any hills. When I go around the neighborhood, it's just pancake flat,
mm-hmm.
and I never run on a treadmill, so I never have the chance to do inclines on that. So, but the trail running was actually really fun.
Yeah.
People that trail run really love it, and I love to hike. We both do.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of doing runs on trails seems like kind of mixing the two interests of hiking and running. And you can probably see a lot more in a lot shorter time because you're not hiking, you're running.
That's true.
So what would be a 10-mile hike and take however long that takes? If you could run several the 10 hours, miles, you can do that in 2 hours. Yeah, 2 hours.
Yeah.
You run 10 miles, mm-hmm. although depending on the elevation. But so I actually had a lot of fun running on the trails. Probably going to do more of that. Because either one, I'll tag along with you.
Yeah.
If you decide to run next weekend or the weekend after on trails. But I'm actually doing the same Badger Cove race you are, but I'm doing the 5K. So I'm not worried about anything because the 5K, I think, is almost flat. I don't even remember. Even if there's minor hills, that's no big deal for the 5K. So I'm not even
worried about it.
So I'm just getting training in just to train for things further along down the line. Although, like I said, the trail running was fun, so I plan on hopefully keeping that up in the future.
Yeah.
With some more runs.
Yeah, so. It was pretty fun. It was kind of nice to mix things up.
Yeah, and the weather was nice. It was windy at the beginning. It was I was actually freezing when I got out the car. I was like, oh my God, I'm freezing. I wish I had brought my gloves. But then once I got out there like a mile in, it wasn't as windy. You kind of start to heat up. The sun, I think, got a little bit higher, and I was hot.
Yep.
Within 2 miles. To the point I actually wish I had brought a different shirt because I had kind of like a t-shirt with, I don't know, some type of running sweater over the top. I don't know what to call it. It's dry fit anyways, but
yeah.
But I wish I had gone a little bit. I had 3 shirts on.
You had 3 shirts on?
Yeah, because I had my a sleeveless dry fit and then a long sleeve dry fit over the top. And then it was so cold when we got out the car, I actually threw another layer on top.
Well, that's why you were so hot.
So that's why I was so hot. Yeah. But when I got out the car, I was freezing. I was like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. I need my gloves. And I was like, I wish I had my beanie.
Glad you didn't wear it though, right?
No.
All that.
Well, I'm glad I didn't have it.
Yeah. Actually. Well, I was so cold getting out of the car that I ended up running with, I had a long sleeve dry fit on, and that's what I was going to run in. But then it was so cold that I threw on a jacket that I just happened to take. It didn't really... running jacket, just fleece, but I was so cold. And I brought my gloves, so I put those on too. And I ended up kind of doing a loop that kind of passed by the car, so I ended up ditching them after about 3 miles.
At the car?
Yeah, I just got rid of the jacket and the gloves, so.
And once again, I'll give the caveat that, yeah, we are in Northern California and our winters are real mild, so yes. I guess we shouldn't be complaining at all.
Right.
So yeah, really, so we get it. We get it. You could be somewhere yeah. where it's a lot colder, although I guess it's been a pretty mild winter. God, it seems like everywhere in the United States.
Yeah, no kidding. It's been great running weather up here, though.
So yeah, so the first thing we were going to talk about was somebody on Twitter posted a blog post from a blog called foodandfunontherun.com. I'll put a link in the show notes. But it was, the blog post by the author was called The Race Shirt Debate. And I actually found it pretty funny because we'd kind of touched on it before. But the author of this blog kind of mentioned that her kind of pet peeves were, one, people that wear race shirts on for that race. So you get the race shirt for the race you're like doing today and you actually
and you
wear
throw it on and
you throw it on and you do and the race in that shirt. That yeah. was one of her pet peeves. And then the second thing was people who wear race shirts for races that they didn't do. Either because maybe they got the shirt, but they didn't do the race at all because they got injured or they were sick or they just couldn't make it or whatever the reason. Or I don't know. Maybe somebody gave you the shirt. How would I know?
I didn't even think about that. I know we've talked about the first part of it.
Like being injured or something?
No. We've talked about right. the first with the shirts, like if like wearing it that same day. But I right. hadn't really thought about...
Like if you didn't do the race.
Right.
Yeah. So I was reading through all the posts and it was kind of people on both sides of the fence. Although... I mean, like we mentioned before, I think it's, you kind of seem to look like a newbie runner if you wear that race shirt on the race day.
Right.
I mean, I guess the first thing is you're breaking that rule of running where you never do something for the first time
right.
on a race day.
Yeah.
So that means, you know, you never buy shoes today and wear them at the race tomorrow for the first time. Same thing with, you know, nutrition that you're taking or sports drinks or clothing or gear or anything like that.
Right.
So although a shirt's not a big deal, technically you're breaking that rule on, you know, you're doing something for the first time on race day.
I mean, I guess it could be a big deal because if you think about it, a lot of race shirts are cotton, which I don't run in cotton right. if I can avoid it.
Right.
I think you're the same way.
Right.
Even if it, yeah, I mean, and I know a lot of them are kind of going towards that technical fabric, but even then for me personally, you know, a lot of them are unisex, so they're not going to fit as well as what I already have to race in, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And then you never know, like with the sizing, like I know some of the races we've done recently, you know, the sizes have been so small that I probably would have had some serious chafing issues
yeah.
if I would have worn it on race day. Or, I mean, that's just part of it. That's just part of the debate, right? Just,
yeah. I mean, I hardly ever wear my race shirts, to be honest, period, because most of the races I've done historically have been 5Ks. So they're cotton shirts.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are not the greatest looking things in the world. They're just not. And then, you know, I don't really like running around with sponsors all over the back of my shirt.
Right.
And then the actual like technical shirts that I have gotten in races, half of those don't even fit me right.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I remember my old Ragnar shirt doesn't fit. It's too small.
Yeah. The Davis Stampede one.
The Davis Stampede one was too small. Yeah. My Arizona fits. Rock and rolls are okay. Although they run a little long, which is odd, but,
well,
so I don't even have the chance, but I guess I would never do it because, I don't know, I already have what I'm wearing at the race. Why am I going to throw on a shirt? I mean,
right.
usually the cotton shirts you see it's people that are a lot of walkers.
Walkers, right.
Or slower runners. But once in a while you see people throw on the shirt and they're, you know, they're throwing an 8-minute pace or I've seen 7-minute pace before. So not a big deal. It was just kind of a funny thing that we read and kind of came up with. And, you know, if you feel comfortable wearing the race shirt or you want to, or maybe really want to support the event.
Right, that's true, because if it's maybe like for a charity or something, supporting a certain charity.
Yeah, I know one person commented, it's like, well, it's good advertising, I guess,
right.
but I guess most of the people they're going to see are people in the race, so they pretty much know what the race is.
It's true.
but yeah, the second part of it was wearing shirts that you didn't do the race. So...
what's your personal take on that?
The first thing I said is, hey, you paid for the race, so you paid for the shirt.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you pay for something, why not wear it?
Right.
Now, I have had the odd situation where I ask people, you know, I see like a race shirt on somebody, not at a race, but just around. And I've literally asked somebody before, hey, how was that race? And I don't remember what the race was. And they go, oh, I didn't do it. And I'm like, okay.
then why are you wearing the
shirt? Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, okay, but it's just kind of an awkward thing. Like, oh, you're wearing this, you know, if it's a marathon shirt or something like that and you didn't do it. Mm-hmm. I guess it makes the shirt a bad conversation starter.
Right.
Because I know one of the comments on the blog was she had seen somebody wearing a Boston marathon jacket. Ooh. Like, hey, Boston, yeah. Like, and they hadn't done it either. So,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of odd. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think that's kind of a pretty specific situation because, you know, with some of the gear, like if you go to some of the bigger races that have expos that sell merchandise, I mean, a lot of those expos are just open to the public. So you can just go buy, you know, like Boston shirts or sweaters or...
Yeah, but dude, I think that's a little really bit different than like...
I think that's probably a little bit different than like you registered for a race, got the shirt, and didn't compete because of whatever reason.
Because, I mean, I guess you see some of the shirts that are actually supposed to be finisher shirts. And a lot of them are, I guess, are I've seen in writing characterized as participant t-shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them just say free t-shirt. but, I mean, you actually have a shirt from a race that you didn't do.
Right.
Do
I actually have, it? I do, but the only time I wear it. So this was actually the first CIM, the California International Marathon, that I registered for. Couple years back and was trained for it but wasn't able to complete for health reasons or medical reasons. So I think we had already like booked the hotel and everything, so we just went out there, went to the expo, check it out, picked up my shirt. So that's the one that I do have that I didn't, you know, I didn't run that marathon that year, but so I do have that shirt and I do wear it, but the only time I wear it is if I'm out running, like usually on one of our evening or night runs where I have a sweatshirt over it. So I technically wear it, but nobody really sees it. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's wearing it, but not wearing it.
Right. I mean, and the reason I wear it is because it's a technical long sleeve shirt, which you don't get too many of those, and it's nice to run in, but I don't think I'd wear it out.
Yeah, I guess a lot like of people
at the gym
see
or just around. I don't know. I mean, but that's kind of my own personal thing. I think
a lot of people see the shirt as maybe like their badge of honor that I did.
Right.
I did, you know, this marathon.
Exactly.
So that's why I'm wearing this shirt.
Right. And that's why I wouldn't feel comfortable wearing it out because I kind of feel like...
You're taking away from the people right, that did it.
Because, yeah. I mean, yeah, I paid for it, but I didn't do it. So...
Right.
Yeah. I mean, kind of like a phony.
You know, the flip side of that argument is, hey, they don't give you the shirt. It's not like the medal where they give it to you after the finish line.
Right.
You get the shirt for like marathons and halves. You get it before, well, all races actually. You get it before you do it. So it's not really a finishing thing. Otherwise, I guess they should give it to you at the finish line. Oh, that would be the craziest finish line ever, you know. Here's your medal. What size are you? I'm a large. Okay.
Although I still kind of see some of those shirts, like especially like half marathons, marathons, as kind of being something that you get like for accomplishing it or for doing it or for at least trying it. Maybe if you didn't get to finish or something, but at least doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's cool. Like when you see other people with a race shirt, you're like, oh, that person did, you know, blank, blank race. It's kind of cool. And you just assume they did it. But I guess if everybody was wearing shirts that they didn't do the races, that would just be odd.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, I mean, at the end of the day, hey, you paid for that shirt no matter what. If you feel comfortable, wear it. If you want to wear your shirt on for that actual race, do it. Although, granted, a lot of people will think you're the newbie, I say with quotes.
Yeah.
But there's nothing wrong with that either.
Yeah.
At the very least, you'll get some attention. Because people are like, oh, that's what the shirt looks like when you're wearing it and stuff. So,
well, it was just like the most recent race we did in Pasadena. We saw a lot of people wearing that shirt. I mean, there was so much blue.
Tons of people. And maybe they didn't have a technical shirt to wear.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe they lost their luggage on the way to the race. You never know.
I doubt it.
You know, hey, that's the one good thing about getting nice technical shirts at races. You know, if somehow you lose your bag, if you're
that's
flying
true.
Out to
it's
a race,
backup.
Hey, at least you got a backup.
It's your backup.
Shirt. So, yeah. So, the other thing we had that I actually found on Twitter was actually about marathons and cheating. And I actually got a pretty good kick out of it. Although, the article's actually from December. But it's called 11 Ways to Cheat While Running a Marathon. And I certainly am not encouraging anybody to cheat, but I just thought some of the stories were hysterical. So you actually have the list there in front of you.
Yeah, I thought when you had sent it to me, I thought it was an entertaining kind
of. And a couple of these stories are, you know, we've heard before, and I'm sure some people have heard before, but I definitely didn't hear all of them.
Yeah.
And there's a Biggest Loser one in there that I thought was funny.
Right. Biggest Loser, the show, TV show.
Yeah, so why don't you share some of those?
So maybe I'll go, I'll count back from 10 and 11 down to 1, maybe.
Okay.
Okay, so 10 and 11, split the course with your brother. So again, this is for non-runners, 26.2 miles may seem like an unreasonable distance. These 11 runners agreed. So 10 and 11, split the course with your brother. So this is in the Comrades Marathon in South Africa in 1999. It's a 56-mile ultramarathon. So there was actually two brothers named Fika and Sergio, who I guess look a lot alike and ended up switching out during the ultramarathon. So they were actually caught because they both wore, the same watches, but on different wrists. So,
which I got to say, big fail on your part. I mean, you actually thought it through. Like, that's let's wear the same clothes, right? And you know, make sure our hair is, you know, probably similar lengths. And yeah, I guess they had to have the same shoes too. But
right. I would assume everything the same.
But they didn't notice that they had different watches,
right?
Like, all on different
separate
hands.
Yeah, separate hands.
So they just kind of turned it into their own personal relay.
Yeah. So they were banned for the race for 11 years. So that's 10 and 11. So 9, hop in a news van. So this is the Biggest Loser one. So this was in Arizona in 2009. So I guess Biggest Loser contestant Dane Patterson, I don't know if how many of you actually watched Biggest Loser, but this is, I guess, just a couple of seasons ago. I guess it was at the end of an episode when it says, you know, where they do the catch up, like, you know, kind of what are they doing now sort of thing, or where they are in their progress. It showed him doing a marathon in Arizona with his wife and finishing in 3 hours and 53 minutes. But I guess that was kind of just something that the NBC producers wanted people to believe. He actually got in a news van for 3 miles at mile 17 to make sure he finished under a certain cutoff that the show wanted him to finish under. And I guess supposedly he went back and ran those missing 3 miles. But so that's number 9. Hop in a news van.
Yeah, I mean, I
can't say I'm too surprised.
It gets me on a rant with Biggest Loser, although right. I watch the show and like the show. Some of the things that they show are unrealistic, to say the least. I mean,
right.
With the amount of training and working out that they do, I always get a kick out of the fact they never show anybody, like, they did like once or twice that I've seen over the years, show people like in the training room with ice on every joint and because you're not going to do that amount of working out without getting banged up.
Right. Especially, and they never show that. Especially at the weights that they are at. I mean, nobody who goes, you know, from not working out at all to working out, even at a healthy weight, you know, is going to not suffer any, you know, injuries or pounding to their joints. You know. But especially, you know, and this isn't a knock on them or anything, but just, you know, the fact that they are, like, you know, really overweight, to have all that extra weight on their joints. I know you hardly ever see them, like, you know, really talk about injuries unless it's something major. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so sorry.
The Biggest Loser thing. See, you got me started. Like, I love the fact that they've incorporated the marathon into the show, like the last couple seasons. Although, I don't know if it makes the marathon look easier than what it should look like.
I think it might.
Because the fact that they, like, it's great that a lot of them accomplishes the 26.2 miles, but they do it in times that are like 8-9 hours sometimes that I've seen, which is going to be beyond the cutoff for any actual marathon.
Right.
So they make it seem a little bit easier.
And then they show this guy, you know, finishing in under 4 hours.
Yeah. So they're not even honest on what he could do.
Right.
And I will say, on a completely another side note, I just saw like a Honda commercial over the weekend that had, it's like promoting the CRV or something like that, and it has like somebody who just finished a race or something, like with her medal on, hopping in the car, and like some family members like texting on the car congratulations or something like that. So it's good to see running in a commercial. Although it was kind of funny because you see the car, and the car is like the only one in the parking lot. Yeah. so
she was probably one of those 8 hour and nine.
So yeah, maybe she did finish it in 9 hours, but I thought the commercial was funny. So yeah, forget my tangents, keep going on the list.
Okay, so back to the list. So number 8, I think we're on, hop on a bicycle. This is the Montreal biker. This was just last year. So, I guess in Montreal, there's bike stations all over the city where you can kind of do this bike sharing thing where you could, you know, pick up a bike, you know, at one place and then ride it to the next place and leave it there. And so there's kind of that going on. So there was a runner there. I don't think they say the name actually.
No.
So I guess this runner, decided to take, advantage of this bike sharing program during the Montreal Marathon this last year, reportedly to get a qualifying time for the Boston Marathon, but he was caught in a photograph. And then
so somebody was smart enough to see a guy with a bib and like racing gear, like on a bike. Like,
and took a picture. Yeah. And then so he was banned from the race for,
I mean, my question is, did he bike along the course, or did he
I hope not
like hit the back streets to kind of like get around, because you look kind of kind of dumb.
I hope he wasn't along on the course
with your bib on.
Right. But, yeah. Was he caught by just a random person in a photograph, or was he caught by like a race photographer?
See, it's that Boston thing. You know, people really want to run
exactly.
Boston.
Yeah. I thought that one was kind of funny. Number 7, skip ahead to the part with the prize money. So this was New York in 2001. So this guy named Martin Franklin finished 19th overall and 5th for U.S. men, I guess, which entitled him to just under like $5,000 in prize money. And it doesn't specify how he was identified as a cheat, but he was. And then so he got disqualified and thrown in jail and actually had to return the prize money too.
Yeah, wait a minute. It doesn't actually say how
he... No. Oh, okay. I kind of would have... Yeah, I was kind of interested in that. I mean, it's interesting... Because I think this is the only one that actually talks about prize money, but it doesn't really say how he was identified as a cheat. So
okay.
Don't know if it was, you know, car, bike.
I'm actually surprised at how many of these are recent.
Yeah.
Like in today's day and age of cell phones and more people doing races and, you know, people, I think, you know, if this was 40 years ago, these would be way more believable because less people and not as noticeable and there's no phones and cameras to catch you, but.
Yeah, I think with the exception of two, all of these were in the last 10, 11 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I think I'm on number 6.
Yeah.
Grab a bus. This is Rob Sloan. Better than a bike, I guess, huh? This is also 2011. So he bussed his way to third place victory during the 2011 Kielder Marathon in England. So I guess he had thrown in the towel at mile 20 and hopped on a bus to the finish line. And then he hid behind a tree before rejoining the race. However, the bus that he hopped on was a race spectator bus. Not the smartest thing to do if you're going to...
I can actually see this happening. You take a bus to the finish and somehow you accidentally, where do I go get some water? And you accidentally cross through the finish line and get a thing. But this guy's like hiding in the trees, like, okay, wait, now's my chance. Let me hop out there.
Yeah, that's where,
people are crazy.
Yep, so he was stripped of his medal and disqualified in his... facing investigation by UK Athletics. So I know it's just if he was just done and then just hopped on the spectator bus just to get to the finish but not actually cross, you know, I understand that. But all right, number 5, blow off the checkpoints. Roberto Madrazo, Berlin 2007. So he apparently was a 2006 Mexican presidential hopeful. And so he, I guess, finished the 2007 Berlin Marathon at 2:41:12. So this he won his age group with that time, but the electronic chip that the runners were wearing, which, you know, I guess most races or at least marathons have now, showed that he had skipped 2 checkpoints and had actually ran 9 miles in only 21 minutes, which obviously
that's
is
an awesome
impossible.
That is awesome. That's a serious training program. He worked for that one.
So he was disqualified. Now I guess maybe I don't really know just because I don't know about this marathon, but. When it says he skipped 2 checkpoints, I guess maybe he didn't do like full loops or something.
Yeah, well, maybe you know, maybe you go left and then straight and then head right and he just kept on going straight.
Got it. I didn't do like the double backs or something like that.
Yeah. It's actually a good reason to have like the if you're doing D-tag, like for time being, like the mats out there, I guess at various points
that's
to
true.
Make sure people are actually doing the course.
Yeah. Not necessarily just to get your 5K split or your 10K split.
I never actually thought about that.
I hadn't thought about it either.
Who's going to cheat, you know?
Right.
But
well, apparently, at least 11 here.
Number four.
Skip miles 13 through 23.
I hate those miles too, you know.
Anthony Gaskell, London 2010. So this was at the London Marathon in 2010. He's 69-year-old. Reportedly finished at 3 hours and 5 minutes, which was the fastest time on record for his 65 and over age group. But when they looked at it a bit closer, he supposedly ran the second half of the marathon in less than an hour.
That's a good time.
another good pace, yeah. So I guess apparently he didn't do the there and back portion of the course entirely, so skipping miles 13 to 23. So I guess afterwards when they called him on, he said he claimed that he had hurt himself and he was simply trying to get to the finish line to receive medical attention. So, but I guess... Still received the honorary plaque for beating his age group that he had to return. Right, yeah. Man. So that's number 4.
Number three,
have your manager give you a ride. Fred Lors in St. Louis, 1904. So this is actually the oldest one that's on this list. And this was at the 1904 Olympics in St. Louis. Fred Lors won the marathon with ease at 3 hours and 13 minutes. And then soon after, it was actually shown that he caught a ride for most of the race with his manager.
It's a good manager.
And only resumed running when the car broke down.
That's kind of funny. He was actually going to take the car the whole way, and then maybe, he's like, "Oh crap, right. The car's I guess I'll have to run now. This sucks." So yeah.
So he claimed that it was a joke gone awry, but he was banned from the Olympics for life. So I mean, was it really worth it? I doubt it. Number two, get someone else to run it for you. So these are this
you
is
you want to run my races for me?
Sure. This was in 2010, China. I guess I don't know how you say this. Xiamen's 2010 marathon.
Let's go with that.
Okay. So of the top 100 finishers, 30 of them were ultimately disqualified. excuse me. The competitors, I guess, were predominantly students who were hoping to earn extra points on their university entrance exams by finishing under 2:34. I've never heard of that, by the way.
What a cool, I got to say, what a right. cool university if you're given like points for running.
For marathon time? Yeah.
That's actually really awesome.
So I guess a lot of them, I guess maybe that's probably what really drove this problem, is that they were trying to finish under 2:34 to get points. And so there was, you know, cheating in lots of different ways. Some of the runners took cars, others sent in ringers to run in their place. Others handed off their time recording devices to faster runners. And there was even some runners who crossed the finish line carrying at least three different chips.
I'd love to see that today. You see, like, you know, the D tags, which are the loops that go on your laces for the timing chip. You just see somebody with like 10 of them on their laces, like there's like both shoes like stacked with them, and like, oh, what's going on there?
Or then the ankle ones, if they have them like going like all the way up to their knee. Yeah,
like, oh, those are great compressions. Wait a minute. Yeah. All right, number one.
So this is actually the only one I had heard about before I read the list. So do not run most of it. This is Rosie Ruiz, so Boston, 1980. So I think Rosie Ruiz, I think probably this is the one that maybe, if you guys have heard of any of them, it's this one.
Yeah, it's the most well-known.
So it was the 1980 Boston Marathon. She was pretty much unknown until this happened. And she crossed the finish line at 2 hours, 31 minutes, and 56 seconds, making her the winning woman. However, she looked pretty good. Wasn't really sweaty or anything like that. So, you know, people kind of got suspicious when they started questioning her about her splits. She had no idea what splits were. And then some students came forward, some Harvard students from the area came forward and saying that they had witnessed her run out of the spectator section into the race only a half a mile from the finish.
So did she even run at the beginning?
I don't think so.
Just
it doesn't, I mean, it doesn't seem like it. It says like she was just in the spectator section and waited. And the interesting thing is to actually qualify for Boston, she had run, the New York Marathon, and later it came out that somebody actually saw her on the subway during the New York Marathon. And this is where she supposedly qualified for Boston.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like those races where the start line's like right near the finish line and you're like, well, I really don't feel like running 26. I think I'll just walk over to this finish line.
I'll walk the two blocks over here and
wait. I'll just kind of wait for a little while. But I guess you shouldn't do it in a time that's going to win you the damn race. Right.
Maybe throw some water on yourself so you look a little sweaty.
Yeah,
and not so fresh.
Definitely do not encourage cheating. I don't understand why anybody would do it.
Not at all.
Because I think the great thing about running is, you know, that sense of pride and accomplishment when you finish a race, when you get that PR and you know, like, hey, all my hard work paid off.
Right. And all that training, this is what got me, you know, all the training I did.
Yeah, really, I mean, I can't even imagine. I mean, I don't even cut a corner. We were doing Pasadena, you know, those out and backs when you had to, like, turn the corner.
Oh, right.
I went around the cones, you know. Right, I wouldn't even cut a cone, much less ever cheat at a race.
You only
like that,
end up cheating yourself.
That's right. But that's pretty funny, though. I mean, actually, all the unique ways, I guess, you could cheat. So we had hop a bike, take a bus, news van.
Have your manager drive you.
Wait
just, in the spectator.
Just go to the finish, I guess. Right. Don't even bother running it.
Or give your timing chip.
Timing chip. That's actually the one I could actually see the most people doing.
Right.
But, in today's day and age. Or have your lookalike brother run it for you. Or just get a friend to run it for you. So that's not what not to do, I guess, at a race.
Yeah, we're not encouraging this in any way. We just thought it was really interesting to...
I thought it was hilarious.
Entertaining.
So, the other thing I want to get to, I got an email from Tony in Kansas. Thanks for the email. Who sent me an email about mainly regarding my IT band issues that I've kind of mentioned probably every episode, I guess, because it's bothered me every week.
It's a continuing problem.
Yeah, so I'll read you part of his email. Tony said, it is pretty common for new runners to experience such issues when ramping up their miles because running heavily works your hamstring muscle group but does very little for stabilization in terms of developing the other muscle groups in the legs. I'm willing to guess your issues stem from an imbalance in your quadricep, hamstring, and hip muscle groups, which I have no doubt that you're dead on the money. Mm-hmm. Also goes on to say, the other advice I would suggest is that the foam roller become your best friend post-run. I've actually been debating getting a foam roller for my IT band for a long time. It's actually been, there's a window up on my computer all the time that has a tab on it on Amazon, and I've just never ordered it. So Tony, I should tell you, I did order a foam roller.
This weekend,
yesterday, yeah. I finally went ahead and ordered it from Running Warehouse. And he also sent me a great article from Running Times about some warm-up and cool-down things that you can do. So thanks, Tony, for the information. And I'm definitely going to have that foam roller probably be my new best friend, although I'm curious. Some people say when you first start foam rolling, it's, like, really painful.
Really?
Yeah. So,
well, I guess I can kind of see that. I have I bought the stick.
The stick.
Yeah, a couple of months ago, I guess. And I just kind of tend to use it after, like, long runs. Or I used it yesterday after the trail run. Mainly, like, my calves and Achilles are usually the ones that are pretty sore the day after. So I used to just kind of try to massage it myself. But mm-hmm. then I saw the stick, so I purchased that. And it is a little painful. I mean, I know the stick is a harder surface.
Yeah.
It's, like, hard plastic than the roller. But I can see how the foam roller would probably be a little painful.
I tried
to start,
your marathon stick. I did not like it so much. Yeah.
Did it hurt?
Yeah, it was kind of hurtful and just... I don't know. It seemed weird.
Yeah. I mean, I mainly use it for calves, Achilles, and sometimes my quads, but not really. They usually don't give me a problem. It's usually my calves.
My IT band didn't feel too bad this week.
That's
good. You know, it's funny. Going back to the beginning, I actually totally forgot to mention, and I'm bringing it back up because I've said I've totally failed at cross training.
All right.
The last, like, two episodes, and I actually did a little bit of cross training. I actually did a P90X. I did one of the DVDs on Tuesday or something like that, chest and back. So it's like a lot of push-ups and pull-ups. And then today I actually hopped on the bike for 10 minutes as like a warm-up. And then I did another P90X. I did, what did I do? Shoulders and arms, I think is what it's called.
Okay.
So a lot of curls and stuff like that. And then I did the ab ripper afterwards.
Oh, yeah. That's
which
a tough
is
one.
Brutal and really tough when you haven't done it for a long time. It's
like
really
tough
hard.
Even if you have.
Yeah, it's, you know, I've never been able to do the entire video, like every single exercise, like the amount of reps that are in the video. But yeah, I just wanted to say, because I did not fail this week, I actually did something else, although I want to do more cross training next week.
But we're back on track, at least.
But we're back
well,
on track.
At least getting on track.
Getting on track. So next week I'm going to try to run 4 days.
Oh, okay.
Next week. So that's kind of been my plan. I think for me, I'm kind of in a phase right now where March is kind of a nothing month for me. It's just a chance to get in a lot of training.
Mm-hmm.
As we look forward to other things in April.
In
I know
April.
I know you're focused on your trail half next month, but
yeah.
For me, I'm kind of looking already ahead to April.
I'm actually a little terrified of my trail half. So hey, Tony from Kansas, or anybody, if you have any pointers.
Yeah, suggestions
help.
For this trail half marathon with a lot of elevation.
Yeah, let me know.
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah. I figure probably my best bet is to walk the uphills when, you know.
Yeah, you can always stop and walk.
And then just, you know, kind of save my legs for the rest of it.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think it's one of those things, like, this one will probably be tough for you, which is good, because I don't think you've had a really tough half marathon in a while.
Yeah.
Because you've done so many of them. But, so this one will be tough, and that's okay. And then if you do another brazen half marathon mm-hmm. on these trails, that one, I think you can kind of really go after it and see what you got. This one's kind of more of a feel it out.
Right.
And hopefully the weather holds.
Yeah.
Knowing our luck, it'll start raining just that weekend.
No, but, don't say that. Yeah. Yeah. My goal is just to finish and not be, hopefully not be the last one out there.
Yeah, I think
that's really my only goal I guess two goals really. Finish it and not be the last one out there.
I'm sure you're going to, well, finishing no doubt. And I'm 90% positive that you're not going to be the last one out there.
I thought you were going to say 90% positive that
you will be the last
that you
one
might
out
be
there.
The last one out
no,
there.
No. Yeah, so I think I'm actually going to join you on a lot of hill runs,
mm-hmm.
Mainly because I'm looking forward to Ragnar SoCal,
right?
Which I don't know if we said, but we're officially registered for and are doing Ragnar SoCal, which is middle of April.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think just last week we kind of figured out who was doing what legs.
Right.
And I'm doing legs with a lot of climbing, a lot of hills.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of because I don't think anybody else wanted to do. You're taking the hardest leg in
I'm
our band.
I'm taking the hardest leg,
so
yeah.
I'll say that caveat. But after that, I'm not doing the longest one, but I'm doing the one that has the most...
Like elevation change,
yeah,
I
the
guess.
Most elevation. It's elevation climbing. It's not descending.
Right. Yeah, actually, I think you have one that's actually... kind of downhill.
It's like
you think
mile
it's going to be. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, never mind.
I think my first leg is like two, 2.5 miles.
I thought it was like, I thought it was one of your longer ones. So what do you have? You have a 2 miler and then.
It's like two something. Remember what it is? No. Two something.
That's all right.
I don't know. It's like 5. And then I finish with a lovely 8 miler. I think I'm finishing with like an 8 miler uphill.
Yeah. I think you're, 2.4, 6, and then, the 8.1, which is very hard.
So it just kind of sucks, like, ending with the long one. But I actually thought that might be better for me in some ways, because if my IT band starts bothering me or something,
then you'll
at
be
least
done.
I won't kill it on the first run. I'll just kill it on the last one, because, like, the 2.5 miler, that's going to be a piece of cake. You know, I'll actually race the band to the next checkpoint. You know, maybe I'll meet you guys there or something like that. But, yeah, so we'll be probably talking about Ragnar a lot more in the coming weeks, or at least right before it. But that's kind of, like, the big thing that I'm looking forward to in April. So that's kind of why I want to do some hill work. And then I'm still thinking of doing the San Francisco Marathon in July, but I won't talk too much about that. But
talk about that later. Yeah. Upcoming.
maybe.
So I decided to do it. I mean, even
but that's got hills. So
I kind of want to do just kind of keep up with like continue doing like some trail runs even after like the half marathon next month. Mm-hmm. And then still kind of do some hill or incline workout. So it sounds like we'll probably just kind of keep doing that to prepare for other stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to do it for this week. You got anything else?
No, I think that's it.
So the website for the podcast, as always, is embracerunning.com. From there, you can jump over to the Facebook page. Give us a like. Share your stories with what's going on with you.
Or give us some pointers.
Give us some pointers, please.
Yes.
I need all the help I can get sometimes.
Me too.
You can send us an email at feedback@embracerunning.com. And is that all the info?
I think that's it.
I think that's it. I feel like I'm forgetting something today. I don't know why I'm blacking out. I think it's because I'm really hungry and I'm ready for dinner. But, so that's going to be it. So until next time,
keep running.
Yeah, take care.